Hello, everyone, and welcome to the big show. I'm Jeff Gammon. I'm your interim host, sitting in for Ewan Rankin, and I'm super happy because I get to hang out with really cool people today. And back from his world tour, Ian, how are you?
I'm great. Yeah, so much world is kind of like, well, did leave the UK. I did leave England and went to Scotland. So that can be counted as going from one country to another, one part of the finest United Kingdom possible, you know. So I went across, I drove, I did about 800 miles. I did about, I mean, I know it's only like a short journey for you guys, but I did about 800 miles. So that was pretty good.
So you stumbled out of your front door and you were in another state. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, basically, yeah. So I went from here, see my friend who lives on the west, towards the west coast of Scotland, but not quite. And then travelled across via Glasgow area-ish, place called Falkirk, and then went up to Aberdeen. Aberdeen, I can inform anyone who needs to go there, is very, very grey. It's basically a city built, it gets the nickname the Granite City
Not
because
because
of
it's so hard, but because it's so boring.
it's so boring. It's
No.
built, it's entirely built of, the place is entirely built of granite. So there is lots and lots of grey. There's a bits of green, but there's not that much green in the city centre. So it does feel oppressively grey, it has to be said. Did some fun stuff though. Went to a museum, a couple of museums and things. Did wandered about. Went to see. If anyone's ever seen the This Is Gonna Hurt. Adam Kay, anyone familiar with him? Comedian, next retired doctor. It's very good comedy. We went to see him in the evening. That was great. But yeah. So yeah.
Awesome.
That
That
was good.
name does
And
sound familiar, so.
This Is Gonna Hurt was his first one hadn't doctored. He'd written two books about
Okay.
his experiences in the NHS as a gynae doc. And then but all the funny and the sad kind of thing, he kind of that's that was his outlet. A guy called Adam Kay.
I've probably seen a clip like on Facebook or something,
Yeah, you
because
might
that
well have.
sounds vaguely familiar.
He tells some very funny stories.
So you said you went 800 miles.
Yeah. And then
If
you
I
went
go 800
500 more.
miles, yeah. If I go 800 miles, I'm still in the United States.
Yeah.
Have you, I mean,
I
if you go
wouldn't.
800 miles, have you even left the state, is the question.
Yeah, well, if I
Yeah, that's
drive
what I was
800
wondering.
miles, then I will actually be in southern Texas.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
But still not Mexico.
No. If I drive 500 miles here, I'm probably somewhere in northern Germany.
Yeah, I can say you should go
Yeah.
over the border for that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, for sure.
Surely.
Austria is not that. I mean, Austria is longer than you think. Like, it takes a good 2.5, 3 hours to get to Salzburg from here. 2.5. Actually, more like 3. But
Yeah.
that's still, like, not enough.
That's good roads, and also the other place, the other thing Aberdeen's famous for is lots of oil, because all the oil rigs are off the North Sea in that particular part of the world. So there's a lot of money there, surprisingly, for a town in the middle of nowhere, for a big city in the middle of nowhere. But yeah, it's all come from oil. Basically, it's oil and gas. That's where the riches have come from, raping the earth.
I guess that would account for why there's a big city in the middle of nowhere, because there's money.
Yeah. There's money, and then further you go further up where my son lives, which is Inverness, which is still further up still. So yeah, there's all of that. So good fun.
Right. Well, welcome back. And Patrice, how's it going for you?
I think I'm doing well. I don't know. don't even ask me. I don't remember. I had a call earlier this week where it was like talking. Actually, earlier this week, I say yesterday. I talked to someone and it was like, oh, yeah, and this and that. We did this last week together. And he was like, that was Monday. And yesterday was Wednesday. So.
Wow. Yeah, it's honestly the only reason I can accept today is Thursday
Yeah.
is because we're all here right now.
That's true. Yeah, maybe we moved the show.
Maybe you did. I mean,
Oh, you
if you
would
sent me an
know.
invite on some random day that oh, the show's starting in 10 minutes, I would probably say, "Oh crap, and turn on the studio lights and, yeah. and hop in to the show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, other than that, yeah, doing good, preparing my talk in, what is it now, 2 weeks?
Cool.
And getting ready for travel next week, so. Happy. Oh. Busy, busy.
All right.
I had a good weekend with a wine hike in Vienna. Tons of, on Sunday, a lot of good food and wine and company. And mm-hmm. Hiking.
I love the idea of a wine hike.
It was good. Like, didn't even, I mean, the funny thing is, we did not even leave the city. Like, we did a hike through the countryside, and it's still Vienna. Because Vienna has a lot of green spaces.
That's awesome. And you had wine.
And I had wine, mm-hmm. and probably don't remember half of it, no. No, but it was good. We got lost a little bit. Like, there was a route planned. We went kind of, we missed one turn and went the other way, basically, and then went basically backwards, kind of. Like, there was one place where, like, there's a shortcut and you could take it, but we kind of went the shortcut the other way, and, yeah, okay.
Isn't that how wine hikes go?
Probably. Probably.
Yeah, I think so.
I think at the end we did about 13, 14 kilometers. But in like 6 hours, something like that. 6, 7 hours.
That's
not very fast. Like
that seems like a totally appropriate pace for a wine hike.
In any normal day, you would have done that in probably an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yeah, but wine hike.
Yeah, exactly. But that's it. A lot of really good wines, really good food. Like wines of any, like basically mostly either Viennese or local Austrian. Also any age. So like from proper bottled wine to what's called Storm, which is basically, well, somewhere in between. It's basically grape juice with some yeast added to it, and it starts to, like alcohol starts to be made by bacteria, I think. And well, somewhere in between on that spectrum, it ends up when you drink it. So it might be just grape juice, or it might be you get drunk because you don't even know this. You will only know after.
I love this challenge.
Yeah, it's always fun. Like you're sitting somewhere and you're drinking one or two or three, and it's kind of, it's a lot of sugar, so you don't notice. It tastes really well. And you're like, oh, this is good. And then you get up and you're like, oh.
Like, oh.
There was more alcohol in that than I thought. And the sugar doesn't help either, because it helps like the alcohol get absorbed. So
right.
Yeah, anyway, so that was my weekend. And I had some Iranian food, I forgot. So good weekend.
Iranian food is good.
I like friend is Iranian, nice. So she was like, she hasn't done that in a long time, and she was like, we should go, and I'm like, sure.
Awesome.
So, and then I had tea time.
Okay, so I think you're winning it this week.
With food, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep. Well, take it as you can get it, right?
Sure.
Yep. And welcome back, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Jeff. My gastrointestinal system has finally recovered from 2 weeks in China. So I'm
good.
Happy about that.
So now you can have wine again?
And today I learned that there is a name for our drunken hikes in high school. We called them a wine hike.
Yes.
I didn't realize what we were doing.
Yeah, it's true.
Years ago.
Yeah, being there in Germany.
Call all my high school friends and say, "Hey, did you know what we were doing?"
Yeah, wine hikes. Yes.
Wine hike.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Wiener Weinwandertage, they're called in German.
Even better.
Now you know.
Sounds better.
Now I
sounds
know.
Better in German. Better, it? Do it in German. Weinwandertage.
So yeah, when my mom was asking where we're. What are you guys doing this week?
I was like, oh, dude, we just hiked.
We hiked.
I mean, to be fair, I've been on my fair share of those as a student as well. Like, sometimes not with wine, usually beer, because that was what people had with them, and I had mm-hmm. one or two. But yeah, I remember packing up a backpack full of beer and then going on a hike somewhere.
Yeah, I guess ours were actually Coors hikes. Yeah, mm-hmm. They weren't wine hikes. They were Coors hikes.
Oh, so that doesn't even count.
That doesn't count. That's water.
That's not even alcohol. Beer. That's not even proper beer.
It's like drinking water. Yeah.
It is.
All right, Tom. So it's been long enough since you've done that. I will tell you part of what happens for making Coors beer. So, you know, they say it's Rocky Mountain water. And that's true because there's the river that's flowing down out of the mountains, down into Golden, and they're actually pulling the water and then filtering it, of course, straight from the river. By the way, Ian, for you, this would be a small stream or a creek.
Okay.
But in Colorado, because we're at the starting point for major rivers, mm-hmm. so they're not that yet. So a river for us is not that big.
Well, I mean, to be fair, you will find that everywhere. Like, I mean, go to Germany, the Danube, like where the Danube starts. They call it a river, and it's like you can basically like reach over it.
Yeah. Well, by the time you get to Golden, mm-hmm. You can't reach over it. You can't jump over it.
Okay.
And especially with spring runoff from the snow, mm-hmm. it'll kill you. But what they do before the water gets siphoned up for Coors, there's these metal grates that go across the river, and so it catches big debris, and that includes things like big pieces of trash and trees, mm-hmm. and cars, because cars go off the road into the river all the time. Whenever there's a car that goes in the river, and the first responders get on scene, and there's no one in the car, they just call down to Coors and say, let us know when the body hits the gate, and we'll come get it.
Mm-hmm. And that water, they stand like right straight from the stream, is bottled up and sold as beer.
Well,
without anything else, like it's just like all the stuff that's in it is all natural, right?
Yeah, and because that's so authentic, what we get over here in the UK is down the road from me in a town, a village called Tadcaster, there is a Molson Coors brewery where they make Coors. So yeah,
same way they take the river with all the pollutants and everything, just bottle it up and sell it.
Exactly. And they also make, they're a really horrible beer that they claim is Spanish. Madry. Have you ever seen Madry?
Yeah,
marketed?
Yeah.
It's made there and it is pish. It is not good. It's terrible, terrible stuff. You should not be allowed to be sold as anything. They say Spanish style beer rather than trying to claim it's got any kind of Spanish heritage, because it's got none. None at all.
Yeah.
Rant over.
Yeah. Yeah, Coors doesn't make beer. They make disappointment in a bottle.
Yeah. Well,
I've tried some American beers. I've not found any good ones.
There is some. There's a ton, but it's not the big name brands. Like there's tons of local small breweries that are really
good. I'm sure those are really good, but the stuff that I've seen when I've been to the States has always been. Actually, there was some good stuff in Vegas. There was some hoppy. Mm. There was some hoppy type stuff that was. Yeah. Pretty good.
Phoenix had a couple really good, like local breweries, microbreweries, and whatever, and they were really good.
But whatever the standard beer is, wasn't particularly good.
Nope, not at all.
Don't even try.
Where I live, I am, I suppose, blessed with breweries.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many small craft brewers that are near me, like within half, I'd say within a 20-minute drive of my place. I couldn't even get to that 20-minute perimeter before, like if I stopped at each one along the way, before I would be probably dangerously intoxicated.
Well, but Jeff, not because of the alcohol, because of the other things that are in the beer, probably.
You mean the happiness?
The happiness, yes.
Yeah,
happiness and other
beer.
Things. Happy other natural beer. Ingredients.
Right.
Ah. That's Colorado, wouldn't surprise
you
me.
You can buy those drinks here.
Oh.
Yeah.
What can't you buy in Colorado?
That's going to be true, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, you got me. You can get it.
I was thinking, like, probably something Austrian.
Still have to visit that part of the world.
Yeah, but, you know, people in Colorado really, really like their alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And there are here, within 20 minutes, dry, at least three massive, massive liquor stores. You know, so Ian, picture the biggest store, like square footage you have.
Mm-hmm.
Now picture that as just alcohol.
Sounds
welcome
good.
To Colorado.
Mm-hmm. I remember that. Phoenix, total, what was it called? Total beer and wine?
Total beverage.
Total beverage. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Warehouse stuffed top to bottom, just alcohol. Well, they had some non-alcoholic things, but very little.
Isn't America still where the supermarket doesn't sell alcohol? You've got to go to a special. Mm. You've got to go to a liquor store.
No,
it depends on the state.
Yes.
So, like Utah is very restrictive.
Yeah.
Colorado is very weird because we used to be very, very restrictive, and now it's a mess. So you can buy beer and wine in grocery stores, and there are six. Places in Colorado where you can also buy spirits.
Hmm.
And that's because we had a law change that allowed for that. And then there was a big fight over it. So that's just like on hold. And I doubt that'll get resolved.
Yeah.
But then, so basically, if you want spirits, you have to go to a liquor store to get your spirits.
Yeah. See, in Arizona, Arizona was is different. Like you could buy basically everything everywhere, but the big stores usually don't have the selection. They have like the basics, like couple things.
Yeah, and Tom, he's in California, where your grocery store is your liquor store.
Yeah, which is
where alcohol flows out of the faucet. No, I'm kidding.
You can buy whatever you want.
You pretty much can't hear it. Just I remember always saying the thing about when we were going to the liquor store and stuff on movies and books and things. And
yeah, but the UK is also weird. Thing. The whole thing license and whatever, like the first time I saw that, I'm like, what does that even mean?
Liquor store.
Yeah, I know.
We're selling things off license rather than from a pub.
Yeah, but it's also off license restaurants and stuff, where I'm like, how does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's mostly because people that run them don't
want to get the alcohol. Yeah, don't want, no, they
drink it.
Oftentimes they also don't want to like go through the hassle of getting the license.
Yeah, well, or they don't drink alcohol, so they have to point themselves in running because quite a few Indian restaurants.
Yeah, that's true.
You can bring your own. You can bring your own with you. They're perfectly happy for that.
They're totally fine.
But yeah,
but that's it. The first time I saw that, I was like, here in Austria, that would be like no alcohol in a restaurant. It's like it's not even possible.
It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. If Austrians don't get their beer or wine at the restaurant, then there's a
problem.
There's a big problem.
Yeah.
There's a revolt.
Okay. Ian, here's another example.
Should we do a show?
Yeah.
Just saying.
I'm going to tell Ian another booze story.
Okay, go for it.
Go on, I'm going.
Okay.
The booze show.
So, like liquor store chains in Colorado, it's very weird how that works. And it's actually very difficult to make that work. But, you know, of course, when you go to a grocery store, you want to buy all your stuff in one place. And so like a grocery store, a lot of them would do this thing where where they had a section in the store that was a full liquor store, but it was in a cage, like, you know, like a chain link fence cage all the way around and over the top. And you'd go in to there and there
you'll go there to jail.
Yeah. And so you'd be able to get your wine and your beer and whatever. And so there would be one person with one cash register in there. So you'd go in to the cage, buy your alcohol, and leave the cage. And then you could do the rest of your shopping.
Yeah, the U.S. is weird when it comes to alcohol. Also the whole open carry thing and whatever, like.
We've got open container, not open carry.
Yeah.
I mean, the kind of weirdness we sort of get between here and Scotland is they've tried to control binge drinking a little bit, and they've tried to sort of cut down on the alcohol consumption, because it's always been a problem for Scotland.
Yeah, the more northern you get, the more that is a problem.
Yeah, so they've gone. So where down here you can buy. Your regular supermarket, you can get 24 cans of really, really shit beer for not very much money. You can't do the same thing when you go to Scotland, because they're trying to control that. Whereas in England, quite happily, going back to my comment about bread and circuses last time, because you want to keep the population happy, bread and circuses, again, you give them 24 cans of really shit beer for 10, 15 quid, and they're very happy, and that keeps your population subdued. Did I say that?
I just had flashbacks to my student days where we would go freshmen to like the Swiss Alps on like a hut somewhere on a mountain, and we would have really 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 cheap really 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 cheap Swiss shit Swiss beer. Tell was the brand. Tell, if you ever see that, run. It was horrible.
Like Foster's, equally never drink that. Sick.
Oh my God, Foster's Lager, and the commercials in the United States, the accents are as bad as what I just did.
Really? Yes. No, never drink it. Never drink it.
Oh, again. Ian, I totally forgot the key thing about the booze in the cage. It's a completely different store.
So it's completely different.
It's a completely different store.
Yeah, legally has to be. Has to be.
Right. So there'd be a parent company that owns the grocery stores and the liquor stores.
That's madness.
Mm-hmm. And so they put one in the other, but they're separate companies because the grocery store couldn't have all that stuff. So it'd be a different store inside the store.
Yeah. Actually, my wife talks about she au-paired in Kentucky and going across the border to get booze and come back again because she was older.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that, you know, it's and all that sort of, and again, that just sounds cool, but on the same market, it sounds ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
Yeah, welcome to the United States. Yeah. All right, hey, as long as we're here, I guess we should probably do some tech news stories.
Yeah, tech-ish.
And speaking of adults feeling like they need to drink, Ian, tell us about your story.
Oh God, yes, this is horrific with becoming a happy ending. So cybercrime in the UK seems to be going from bad to worse, and there's been continuing. Land Rover Group, Jaguar Land Rover Group, had their trousers taken down a couple of weeks ago. This last Thursday, a chain of independent nurseries by the name of Kido, K-I-D-O, were compromised by a group called Radiant. They use an app that you can obviously book your child in for their sessions and whatever else. They use that to hoover up loads of credentials and loads of names, addresses, date of birth of all the kids. And then they held that company to ransom. Like early last week, as I was reading about it then, they were talking about situations where they were going to ransom them. They were going to keep drip feeding out the kids' details until eventually they paid up. This went on for a few days. Until I believe internally within the cybersecurity world, or not cybersecurity, but the cybercrime world, various other groups says, no, guys, you don't do that. And the data has been deleted. I think probably someone has warned them that they will get visited by men with big fists to come and give them an education session if they don't do it. Or they will be hacked. Wow. They will be hacked quite severely. So It appears to have sorted itself out, but even so, I mean, it was terrifying for some of the families where they actually rang someone up at home and said, "We've got your kids, don't you? Tell those kiddo guys to pay us."
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, oh my God. It's ridiculous to levels thereof. Of it's one thing to target a company like JLR or Marks and Spencer's or the Co-op Group. I mean, big faceless corporation. Yeah, all right. You know, but do not go after effectively children and ransoming the details of your toddler, essentially. That's just crazy. Crazy.
You know you have screwed up as a bad guy when the other bad guys are calling you up and say, "Okay, you have crossed a line and you better fix this or we're going to fix you."
That's pretty much what I think has probably happened in the background is that they said that they're, from what I read, Guardian have got a lot of comments as well, that in one of the, in the cyber hacker forum type things, a group of says, no, you don't do this. Stop doing it now. And I possibly think others have also reached out to that group and said, no, you're not doing that. That's not how we work. And so that's a good result. And apparently they've donated some of the ill-gotten Bitcoins to charity. I think it says here, performance of all the criminals of the outside group took, yeah. No, let's see. Of course, it was Radiant is the name of the group, and they said, we're hurting kids, they told BBC News. But new, possibly inexperienced group, so they thought, but they probably hacked what they thought was an easy target, and it wouldn't take very much for them to cough up. And the group of obviously, the kiddo group have always got good advice, and they said, no, we're not paying up, don't go away.
Yeah.
And so I have a new prediction, or a prediction I'll use for a prediction show. In January, which is this data will show up, even though they said they deleted it. This data will show up sometime next year somewhere.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. You wonder how far that data spidered out to various bits of the dark web already. I mean, that is the concern.
Yeah, once it's out there somewhere, even if you delete it from the original source, the likelihood it's all gone is very, very low. Right. Tom, I think your prediction is
pretty accurate.
So, wow.
You're quite right. And there seems to be also a trend. I mean, I don't know if this is another company that's also from the same, but the large consultancy firm Tata Consulting Services also seem to be somewhat a target for a lot of the hacking groups at the moment. They're obviously particularly writing poorly coded apps and things for these various companies that they found backdoors into. So that's another thing to watch out, because again, Tata are owners of Jaguar Land Rover Group. The IT companies that looked after both Co-op and Marks and Spencer's were both Tata. I don't know whether this is also the same here, but.
Yeah, well, so. And Radiant lost money on their hack.
They have. And my heart bleeds for Radiant if they lost money.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they, I'm hoping we've, the police are managing to track them down. They're a UK-based group. They may crack them down. We managed to find the Marks and Spencer hackers and a few of the other ones. There's all kinds of problems they can get themselves into. I mean, it's not just, there's various kind of child protection kind of rules in which they can use as leverage to basically sue them, well, not sue them, but basically charge them with all kinds of things, send them to prison, where the prison population won't love them at all.
Yeah, that will be a very big problem for them. Mm.
Yeah, that again will be a very big problem for them. They've got kids and families at home, and they will not like them very much at all.
That's right.
So,
all right, well, then, Patrice, as long as we're talking about welfare problems and children,
mm-hmm.
Tell us about your story.
Yeah, so I brought a very light story. It's like totally light topic. And of course it's not. Where do we start? So this is definitely a tech story. It's about some study, or two studies actually, done recently by the Trevor Project and by the Hope Lab / Born This Way Foundation, showing that LGBTQ youth have worse mental health outcomes without access to safe online spaces. not a surprise, I would say, for anybody. But yeah. I thought I would bring that story because, you know, we talk a lot about the negative sides of the internet, about social media and like online spaces that are cesspools sometimes and all of that. And especially for LGBTQ people, like especially young LGBTQ people, there's been, I mean, we've been under attack, basically, in most countries, like the US especially, but like this goes beyond. There's like tons of countries in all over Europe where people are feel emboldened to attack people, and especially there's always the, oh, young people need to be protected, and we should limit access to, especially for transgender people, because, you know, that seems to be the boogeyman these days. We should limit access to any discussions of gender identities, sexuality in schools, in online places, and so on. And what people forget is, and I think that goes beyond youth, it's for, I think, all of us. Those online spaces sometimes are safer and better, have better access to the things we want, or the things we need, actually, than the real world is. Like, remember, I mean, it's like decades ago, it was like, if you're, let's pick an example. If you're gay, like it was pretty hard for you to figure out to meet people that are like-minded. Not impossible, and there were places you could go that had organized around that, but it was kind of difficult, especially for a young person, to understand that and know what to do. And these days with online places, it's easier than ever for anything we're interested in, anything we want to know, to find a community for that, right? So if Jeff wants to find the people that live without pants, there's probably a community for that, right? Join the internet. While in your area, that might be pretty difficult to find someone like that. I mean, maybe there is someone, but like, how do you know?
You just walk around without pants.
That in the US might be a problem.
Yes.
Yeah. So as I said, I just wanted to point that out. I think it's kind of an obvious thing for anybody who thinks about it, but I think people always use protect the children, all of this BS, for the worst things for the actual children.
Yeah, I mean, I was clicking through in place to see that the places that people feel safest is at least things like TikTok, Discord, YouTube, Instagram, FaceAche is somewhere way down the bottom, which is no stop really these days, because it is a right wing hate. It's not a right wing hate fest, but that is just starting to a good thing, because it is. I mean, I agree with you completely that finding people that are like minded in a small village somewhere in Wales, and taking the British example, might be very difficult. But when you've got the online world to go out, you can find people and talk to people that experience the same things you are. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
And you can only be a good safe place.
Can only be a good thing.
Can someone explain the chart that's in this article?
The
one with the orange and yellow bars.
So basically they compared mental health in between two groups, people that felt safe and felt understood online, and people or youth that did not, and how much anxiety do they have, how much depression do they have, do they have considered suicide, have they attempted suicide, and the differences are there. I mean, it's not massive. It's not like, oh, one is 100% and the other is zero, but it is lower, right? And sometimes lower is all you need, especially when it comes to, all of it, basically, but especially suicide.
I mean, it seems logical that being able to find a safe place, either in the real world or online, would be beneficial.
Yes, but apparently it's not obvious for certain lawmakers in a lot of countries.
Right. Yeah, that's true. You know, just from a scientific point of view, though, I always get worried about mixing up correlation to causation.
Yeah, it's not about causation. Like the online place probably doesn't cause people to not want to kill themselves, but it helps them to maybe not do it at the end.
Yeah. Patrice, you said, and I have to paraphrase now, because memory like a goldfish. be a goldfish. That lawmakers don't get the importance of this.
Yes,
I think in many cases they do. And they're acting with malicious intent to try and limit these spaces to cause harm to all these people that need these resources.
For political gains at the end.
For political gains. And that's absolutely abhorrent.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I said it was something I said it should be obvious, but apparently has to be said. And people, I mean, online, it's not all good. Like, there is a lot of problems online as well, and that is also addressed here. Like, it's not that, we go online and then everything is better. No, there's, like, people are still at risk for the downsides of especially social media, 100%. But it also helps with finding connection, finding support, finding information sometimes. I mean, I'm in the lucky position that I live in a somewhat still free country, but go to the US and go to certain other states in Europe where that's not the case. Mm-hmm. Actually, don't have to go very far from here. It's like more or less right across the border where that information is not as freely available anymore.
Yeah. That's a real problem. Yep. And you're right about the United States. Even in states like California and Colorado, Washington State, Oregon,
all of them.
These states, where there are more resources and there are more support options for the LGBTQ plus community, it's still not safe.
It is not. In such a big country with such a big diverse population, that is crackers.
Yeah, and like, the thing is, even in those states, the federal government, the influence of the federal government is really real. It goes beyond. There was another article that I didn't pick for more political reasons. Funding to organizations that anywhere in the world support anything related to especially transgender people, but anything, abortion, LGBTQ, whatever, anything like that. If they do it anywhere in the world, their funding gets cut off. So they're influencing now other places and other countries as well. And that is scary as hell, because we are in a global world and a lot of companies work across the globe.
Mm-hmm.
Or a lot of organizations, especially. Yeah. Like, I don't know, Red Cross, for example.
I was quite pleased with my employer. We're actually really good about the point things were getting kind of hairy in the States last year. They were very supportive, saying we love our guys, everybody, we do not and we will never make changes to our policies based on what the government thinks. It's what we think because it's our company.
Yeah,
good.
So I was very, very sort of reassured by that. We're not going to get any weirdness, that my American colleagues are going to get treated any differently to my ones in Europe. You know, there are other reasons why they don't treat them as completely simply. It would be more a financial way.
Yes.
But in terms of how they're looked after as individuals, it doesn't seem to be as, that seems to be better at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, we need those online spaces. I mean, and it's not, the thing is, it's not just for LGBTQ plus people. There's like rare diseases, for example, and like, I don't know, HIV like is one of them, but there's maybe not a rare disease, but something that is not talked as much about. There's a lot of support communities for a lot of different things. Those should exist. maybe I'll make one or two exceptions where I'm like, okay, child pornography, that's where I draw the line. But other than that, I'm like, yeah, as long as it's consensual and safe, there should be a place for it online.
Yeah. Now, there's equally the other side of the coin, sort of the right to die groups.
Oh, yeah.
Again, yes. that's a whole thing that can be very difficult to find sensible information about. And the UK is getting better. Europe is better still in some.
Yeah.
But again, depends where you are.
It depends where you are, yeah.
And again, finding information so you can make informed decisions is not easy. I mean, things I've read, like, just lately, because it's been the news here again. And that seems crazy again to me.
And it's not as if the information that is available online is good in like even here in Austria or something. I mean, there's glaring gaps in what's available online information wise. Like, there's so much information that would be available, but nobody puts it online for fear of. Like, certain surgeries are not listed on websites for hospitals still, because they're afraid of it. So it's not as if that's like online is the free, everything is available. It's unfortunately not. But it's better.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of things not being available online, Tom, your story.
What's not available online, Tom? Now I'm interested.
one safe space may be going away. So my story is about AOL shutting down dial-up service after...
Wait, that's still a 30, thing?
34 years.
That
would
surprise me when I saw the article.
Wow.
And a related story is, you know, AOL is owned by Yahoo now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that I heard.
a related story is that Yahoo may be in talks with Bending Spoons to sell them AOL. You know, Bending Spoons is sort of the landing spot for all the old crap that nobody wants anymore.
So what you're telling me is that up until now, AOL was still sending out coasters to get you to sign up for that dial-up.
Still
has an AOL email address here.
Oh, I know tons of people like that.
Tons of people. So according
to an AOL email address.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It's still around. Yeah.
According to US Census data, there is about 1,250,000 people in the United States that access the internet through dial-ups.
How is that even working at this point? I mean, you can, like, if you get on your phone LTE connection, it barely works these days. Like, you're basically cut off because nothing works, because everything needs more bandwidth than LTE now. So I'm like, how does it even work on dial-up? Like, I don't think you can go to any website. Like, nothing is going to
work.
Right. I think you'd be broke to death, wouldn't you?
Let me open Facebook. Yeah. I'll come back next week when the page is loaded.
You are underscoring part of the problem here in the United States.
Yes.
We have parts of the country that are completely underserved for communication.
Yeah.
Right. And
true.
And their only option really is dial-up, but cell service is garbage.
Or the Nazi company. No, I meant, what was it called?
Right. Yeah, Starlink.
Starlink, thank you.
But for a lot of these people, they can't afford that.
That's true.
So their option has been
$100 a month. It's not.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering what they're paying for dial-up, though. I don't think it's that cheap.
Well, they probably just have whatever they're paying for a traditional landline phone. And that's their only communication tool.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But I have no idea what that would even cost now.
But it's probably pay by minute, so you can control how much it's going to cost. You're like, okay, I'll only go online 10 minutes.
It's an important point that I think we sorely underestimate the number of people that live in areas where broadband and a decent mobile service is not available. Neither one.
Yeah. As I always say.
And then in some areas, there is no broadband and maybe minimal mobile access.
Yeah. Yeah.
These aren't small communities. I know towns of 10,000-15,000 people that don't have broadband infrastructure.
And I would bet if you ask the local whatever, the local mayor or whatever, they would tell you, wait, no, I don't see a problem. It works just fine for us.
Well, I think they all understand that it's a financial problem, that no company is going to invest money to hook up 5,000 people. They're not going to spend $10 million to hook up 5,000 people.
Yeah, and but so there is solutions for that. If a city wants to do it, even for 5,000 people, if they all get together, they can do it. Like, they've done it sometimes in Germany or in Austria or whatever. Like, we have also regions where was not feasible, and they worked it out. So I think that the communities where that's not possible probably have also some local politicians or whatever blocking it, basically.
Yes.
Or people
in
general.
Patrice, you just nailed a big problem.
Yeah.
Setting up municipal broadband is actually surprisingly difficult in the United States because of the way laws are written.
Yes.
And even in places where you can do it, then you have companies like Comcast, Xfinity now, that come in and lobby and really push hard to stop that from happening.
Yeah, of course.
Even if they're not going to service the area.
Because they don't care about the small towns. Yeah. What they're worried about is a big city like Los Angeles or San Francisco that creates a municipal broadband.
Germany did something. Germany did something like, I don't know, 15, 20, something like that years ago. They were auctioning off, was it LTE? Was it 5G? I don't remember. They were auctioning off frequency access. And one of the conditions was you have to basically allow or provide service. And I think it was mobile service, but with a minimum guaranteed bandwidth of, I think it was 50 megabits to rural areas that in Germany, like all of Germany, that do not have access yet. I think they distributed a little bit, like whoever got the frequency got a chunk of that, depending on, I don't know what rule. But basically, they ensured that at least broadband access is available everywhere in the country. Don't know how well it worked at the end, but I know that they at least tried.
Small rural villages here that have got no infrastructure. The local farmer's gone out and dug along his land. The next local farmer has done the same to lay the pipe, and then they've arrange with a bigger provider to make a connection at some point, but they've done the whole dragging of the lines and getting the connection in and putting a point of presence in and then distributing it around the village.
Yes.
I know a couple of guys have been involved in projects like that, and that seems it works pretty well, which is, it's not difficult stuff if you can get the people to help you, because they get the farmers to. Yeah.
It's not even that expensive at the end if you do it like that way.
No. They've got really good connections in that village now. Mm-hmm. But it's just
some villages have better broadband connections than people in big cities.
I've got a big outlet store. Way you can't see it. It's way behind the trees over the road there. But I still get. I mean, because our houses were built in the '50s, I've got there is a copper wire going from the top of my house over to a telegraph pole. It goes down and then comes along to a cabinet. So my speed is always limited by that until they finally put me fiber.
Yeah, you should just go in, pull that copper line down, put some fiber up.
That'll fix everything right there.
That will fix everything.
Okay, so in honor of AOL shutting down, I have to play this.
Okay. No, I think I know what's coming. Tom has grabbed his modem that he still has.
I think that was a 300K.
Oh, we didn't hear it, Tom.
We didn't hear it, Tom.
Oh, you didn't hear it.
No, we did not hear
it's
it.
It's too loud. Yeah?
No.
No.
Probably gets background noise.
It's filtered by that. You get filtered out by
that. Yeah, Zoom probably thinks it's,
Yeah,
fun fact about AOL over here. When you had the AOL client and you got email, you know that you have email.
Oh yes.
The voice of that over here was Joanne Lumley.
No way.
Yes, they got her to do the voice. You have email.
That's fantastic. So, all right. Well, then I think I should tell everyone that Awe Technologies is pretty awesome because they're supporting us. Awe Technologies is making sure we have the bandwidth, server space, all of that, so we can bring amazing shows to you every single week. And without their help, we wouldn't be here. And yep, it's got to be Zoom. It's cutting it out because didn't hear it from you either, Patrice.
I could turn it on. Let's see.
There it goes.
That's me.
I'll put the link in the chat.
Oh, good times. Yeah. So, all right. Well, back to Awe Technologies. If you have, say, a construction project, you need to have monitoring for your site. That can be environmental, video, all of that stuff. They're going to take care of it, and they're going to do an awesome job. And you should go check them out, awetechnologies.co.uk, and start a construction project so you can use their services. All right. Thank you, Awe Technologies. And Patrice, you just mentioned you dropped a link into our live chat. Do you mind telling people about that live chat?
I don't mind at all. We have a really cool live chat, live streaming system. So we're right now, as we're recording this, streaming on live.britishtechnetwork.com. We always do that when we're recording, which is Thursdays, 7 p.m. UK time, for this very show, and also Fridays, 4 p.m. UK time, for the Mac show. So if you're interested in talking about Apple and all of that, or hearing us talk about Apple, or talking to us live in the chat about that, you can join us there. And live.britishtechnetwork.com is super easy. Like, you have the video on the left, you have the chat on the right, you just, there's a box says send a message to chat, and you just start typing, and that's it. And it generates really cool names, like the Elastic Wilds, for example, or the Tender Allen, the Priceless Ariabatha. Wow, that's a hard word. But if you want to change your name, up top, there's a purple button. Click on it, change name, and you can be anybody you want. Except for awesome. Tom F. and Patrice and Jeff Gamet, because those names are taken.
Oh, yeah, turns out they are. Huh. How about that? All right, Patrice, thank you for doing that.
You're welcome.
And now it's time for some cool things. So I'm going to look in the chat to see who has dropped the first cool thing in, and that would be Tom.
Okay, I guess I'm fast on the fingers today. My cool thing is an airplane that's not been built yet. It's called the Windrunner, and a company called Radia from Boulder, Colorado, Jeff, is planning on building a cargo plane, which is designed to carry huge wind turbines around the world. And this is a cool thing because it is so friggin' big, the plan for this anyway. It's going to be 100 meters in length from nose to tail. 100 meters.
How many finger? No, I don't know. Weird units.
How many
is
bananas
that?
Is that?
Bananas.
Football,
is that?
How many football fields?
How football many football fields. Fields is that? Yes.
It's like 1.2 football fields.
Okay. Now I got it.
Yeah, now you know. Yeah, 100 meters is not descriptive enough.
No.
Yeah. And it
we're the
have,
American Tech Network. Don't you know that?
It will have 12 times the storage capacity of a 747.
Nice.
For comparison.
It's incredible machine.
That is crazy.
So it's obviously it's not built yet, but it sounds like they have a business plan and funding for this.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't wait to see this freaking thing flying. This would, I mean, when a 777 flies overhead, I think that, you know, that is just crazy that something that big is flying.
Yeah, I mean, it's anyway. Kind of like an Antonov, right? I mean, which is, I think, still
right.
the biggest.
It's a lot like that.
Yeah.
Right. It's a lot like that. And I've seen one of those a while ago at an air show.
Wow. And 60% yeah, longer than the biggest existing aircraft. Wow.
Right.
Right. Wow,
the
that?
Cockpit is 5 stories high.
Yeah, up. Yes. It's not 5 stories high. It's 5 stories up.
5 stories up. Yes.
Yes. Wow.
So
that is...
You have to get on the elevator and hit 5 to get to the cockpit.
Yes. That is pretty cool.
So I don't think it's a great thing to pick yet to be built things for cool things. But
yeah. I think it is. It is cool. I have one slight dent in that plan. We already have that problem with the A380 that we barely have any places they can land because you need pretty long runways for it to take off or land. And the heavier it is and the bigger it is, the longer and the more, like, the bigger the wingspan is, the harder that is. So,
I think the only practical purpose wouldn't be, you know, going from, you know, Denver to Dallas. It would
yeah,
be
probably
stupid.
Not.
You just put it on a train.
Yes.
But if you're building something in the U.S. and you needed to ship it to Europe, you could go between military bases or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, there's always need for big things. I mean, and even if it's just getting, I don't know, airplane parts from A to B sometimes, right. or even entire airplanes. Right. Like sometimes it's more efficient to throw an airplane in another airplane and ship it or fly it or multiple of them than to actually fly them separately.
And who can forget the space shuttle sitting on top of 747?
Oh yeah,
yeah. That was amazing to see.
That was amazing. who can forget? No, actually, I'm not going to tell you that because that would be a spoiler for Jeff.
Yeah, no spoilers.
Yeah, not
so Jeff. I think you need to make a trip to Boulder and check out this company and see if they have any prototypes or models.
On you should do an interview with them.
I've already brought up their website, so I'm going to see if I can actually get in contact with these people.
That would be fun.
That'd be super cool. So cool. All right. Well, Ian, it's your turn.
Yeah. Well, I'll start off with an uncool thing, and I'll move on to the cool thing. So cool thing. I've been wanting to buy one of those kind of screenless tracker type things. I regret the loss of my old original old school Fitbit, which did my steps and a few other things, and I could clip it and carry it everywhere. I don't need screens. I mean, you know, I'm a watch geek. I don't need screens and things. I just need something that will do it. And I've seen the Whoop, but I have to pay a subscription and more data than I'll ever need. Polar, super company. Inventors of most of the wearable heart rate monitoring tech that's around released a device called the Loop. Came out just last week. I got in early, ordered one. It came last week before my trip and I took it with me. And it's shockingly bad. Didn't update regularly, wouldn't track anything. Numbers were mad. Calculations were all off. I shipped it back to them. But I still needed a tracker because I still want, and I had a look around Amazon. And turns out the thing I've got on my wrist today, which immediately I've got on a different strap, because it's just takes a single pass strap that you can find anywhere, is this little cheap Chinese thing. It's made entirely of Chinesium. It came in one of those unremarkable boxes that you know it's going to be possibly dodgy. And it costs all of £30. And I thought, well, I'm going to give this a try to see, I like wearing the thing. But in all honesty, it gives me a heart rate which is comparable to my Garmin. It gives me, to be fair, blood pressure numbers, which I don't trust, toffee.
You know how that sounded? It sounded like the watch or the tracker thing was giving you heart palpitations because it was so expensive or whatever.
The other one did. But no, it was £150 that wasn't any use, so it went back. But this, it gives me, I'm not about to run an ultra, climb Everest,
no?
Or any other of these things.
Why not?
I want all their all. Nah, I'm too old now. That didn't last week, but not this week. You know, that's it. That didn't last week, but this week I'm older. I don't want to do it. And so I don't need terribly accurate data. I just need to see change. That's really what I'm interested in. Like if my scales are wrong, if I get on them and the number's smaller than the one before, chances are way less. So much the same way with this, as long as it gives me a reasonable number, monitors my sleep, I'm not sure how long it will last or whether it's any use, but I figure I can try all these things out for a small investment of 30 quid. And if it turns out to be out of junk, it can get sent back to Amazon. So, but it's been comfortable. I've the data that it's giving me is comparable to my Garmin. It's useful. So I can recommend these things. You can buy them from Amazon for about £30. If you go on AliExpress, there are a dozen companies selling them for about 15 if you can wait for them to come. But it is complete and utter junk. It's probably complete and utter junk, and the sensor is probably the cheapest thing you can buy in all of the world. And the data is not medically any use of anyone. But if you want to know if your heart rate's going a bit mad, you get some idea. That's the way I look at it. I can see the lady.
Stop reading the news.
The medical data. I can see the lady who works for a medical data company is going, "Ian, that's shit. That's complete shit."
Yes.
But try not to say as lightly as possible.
I just think they need some branding help. The name of the company is ridiculous.
Oh, it's just one of the alphabet companies. It's not. It's they get a Scrabble board. Is how they get. The companies that sell stuff on Amazon.
Basically get a Scrabble bag.
They cut the letters and they tip them out, and then they arrange them in some order that looks like an English word.
Yeah, they have like five dice with 26 sides, and they just throw them, and like whatever comes out, that's the name.
Yep, that's exactly it.
And if the name is taken, they just do it again.
Yep, exactly. I agree completely. It didn't come in the white box of disappointment, which you normally know it's going to be shocking if it does. Mm-hmm. But it seems all right. I will.
So I think we have a new summer of fun topic next year, which
white box of disappointment. No,
we
don't want that.
We'll say a word, and the question will be: Is this a real Japanese supplier of crap on Temu, or is it made up?
Yes.
There's no way you can tell the difference.
Some of those made up company names are.
Tom, add it to the list.
That's definitely a summer of fun topic. How many randomly made up names, and then what shocking products they sell?
Right. Yes.
I love
completely
this plan.
Agree.
Me too.
Okay.
Completely agree.
So, Patrice, I believe that means it's your turn now.
It's my turn. Okay. My turn is a TV show. There is a
I've seen ads for this.
Very long-running TV procedural called NCIS. It's been around for about 75,000 years. Not quite, but I think they're like somewhere in their 30s, 40 seasons. Like, I don't know. It's been a while. 20, I don't remember. Been around for a while. And there are two characters on it that left the show many years ago. Tony DiNozzo and Siva David, aka Siva is Cote de Pablo and Tony is Michael Weatherly. And they're kind of like everybody likes them. They have had a very complicated work personal life relationship over time, very different backgrounds, not kind of being drawn together, but not working together most of the time. And they had a kid together on the show. And then she died and didn't die really, but she disappeared at the end and then came back. And like that was complicated. But I think people like their story and like them, like also the actors, wanted to see more. And so I don't remember, I think on some podcast they were doing together, they announced, or they talked about, oh, maybe we should do a show together, and this is the result. Or I think it is the result. Wow. At least there's a show together with those two, NCIS, Tony and Siva. And they're traveling all over Europe, so it's set in Europe, for the reason that they always wanted to do that. So why not? It's really, really interesting. It's kind of a spy thriller. It's less the procedural, like, you know, someone's murdered or someone disappears or whatever. It's more about their story, their history and stuff that happens to them. Also their relationship and like the relationship with their daughter and all of that. And it plays in, I think, at least two different timelines. There's like the past timeline where Tony and Ziva, like where Ziva came back basically and wanted to go back to her somewhat normal life, and the present timeline where we know that didn't work out the way she thought, and their relationship also didn't work out the way they thought.
May have to watch some of this.
So really interesting. I think 7 episodes are already out, 6 or something. I watched the latest today. Really good show. I love Cote de Pablo. Like she's, I just like her, and Michael Weathery is not too bad either. So, and together they're actually pretty funny and pretty good. And it's a good mix of seriousness. Like she is the badass secret agent type basically, and she can kick ass and she can kill people and all of that. And he's more the dandy sometimes, but also the class clown, and he knows it. He knows it, like, and but that's it. Together they just work really well together. They get shit done at the end, and they have of course also good friends and good connections with people and whatever that helped them. So good show, highly recommend it. Don't remember on which network it is now.
Paramount.
Yes, unfortunately it is in Paramount. Yes, I remember.
I've got Paramount Plus, so I might have to watch or some of that.
Yeah, but highly recommend it. If you're into NCIS at all, or back in the day, maybe you even dropped off at some point, but you like them, go watch it. It's absolutely worth it.
My parents are very much into NCIS. All the spin-offs, all the
me too.
Knockoff versions.
Yeah, me too.
So I'm going to let them know about this. And I have no doubt they'll be watching it. Yeah. They probably already are.
Oh, probably. Yeah. But it also means, Jeff, we probably should watch an episode of this. Or of NCIS.
At some point.
if you haven't watched it, then we should do that.
That could be very, very entertaining for
that
our audience.
That could be absolutely very entertaining. I'll add it to our list.
Okay. All right, then I believe that brings it to me.
It does.
And if you were here for the pre-show, my cool thing is no surprise at all, and it's Inktober, because we're in October.
That is a cool thing.
As we record, this is October 2nd. So that means I have 2 drawings out, and just like you do every year with Inktober, If you follow their basic guidelines, you do a drawing each day. They do offer prompts, but you can do whatever you want because it's Inktober. The thing is, be creative. And so I'm doing it. It's a lot of fun. There's now a link in the live chat for Inktober, which I believe it's what, inktober.com. And I have done it many years. It's a lot of fun. So if you want to do it, let me know when your drawings are online, if you post them, or if you just want to share them with me privately, whatever. I would love to see your art. And my art is showing up on Pixel Fed and Blue Sky, and this year I'm posting it to LinkedIn as well, because why not? And for the people that follow me on Facebook, it's there too. Not on Instagram, because Meta has made it straight up a pain in the ass to include Instagram in what you're doing.
Basically, so, anything. Yes.
Yeah. So I don't even know the last time I went and launched Instagram on my phone. So. Sorry, not there. But anyhow, Inktober, it is so much fun. They also do a thing where they do Inktober, but it's like the whole year. And so you get a prompt for each week. So instead of having to do 365 drawings and then feel like, oh, holy crap, this is just way too much, one a week. And yeah, so that one's called Inktober 52. I do Inktober every year, and then randomly throughout the year, not related to Inktober, you'll probably see drawings pop up from me. So there you go. It is now time to wrap up. So, Ian, where can people find you?
People can find me here on The Big Show every Thursday when I'm not gadding around the world. Otherwise, I am available on LinkedIn. I work for Veeam. So you can find me there. And I posted an article last Friday. So about our latest release. Otherwise, I'm on Instagram. I've abandoned Facebook now. I'm on Instagram, Blue Sky somewhere. TIOABOA, you'll find me there.
Awesome. All right, Patrice, where can people find you?
Well, every week, almost every week, you're on the British Tech Network on Thursdays on The Big Show and on Fridays on The Mech Show. And I say almost because sometimes I'm traveling, like next week, next 2 weeks. I'm like everything I'm doing, you can find on my website, thepatrice.com. Gets you there. All the podcasts, the projects, the social media, PixelFed, for example, as well. I want to mention that here. And then Jeff and I have a show that we've basically just already mentioned about 15 million times on this show, Retro Rewatch. We rewatch retro TV shows. We are closing in on the end of, or actually on the somewhere around the middle, I think we're right now, of season 3 of Stargate SG-1. The next one should be Demons, if I remember correctly. And that was a good one. I remember. I mean, we've of course already recorded it. We'll be out probably tomorrow or on Saturday, as usual.
Awesome. And I know I say this pretty much every single time you talk about the show, Patrice, but it's true. It is so much fun. I love that we're doing the show together.
Me too.
Yeah. Okay, Tom, where can people find you?
People can find me on Mastodon. I am Tom F at sfba.social.
Awesome. Okay. Then for me, Jay Gamut on all the socials. Let's see, active mostly on Mastodon and Blue Sky and Pixel Fed. And so you can see my Inktober drawings there. And they're also showing up on Facebook. Then let's see, for shows, Tuesdays on Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live, Thursdays on Dave Ginsburg's In Touch with iOS, here on the British Tech Network for The Big Show on Thursdays, The Mac Show on Fridays. Brian Chaffin and I do The Context Machine, and as Patrice just pointed out, we do Retro Rewatch, and I think that's most of the shows. Okay, so with that, thank you to the three of you for being just so awesome and putting a smile on my face, because we know the real reason for these shows is to make me smile. So I'm sure that's what Ewan had in mind when he started British Tech Network, right? That has to be it.
Has to be it.
So thank you for just being absolutely wonderful. Everyone that watches or listens live, participates in the live chat, thank you for being here and being part of the BTN family. All of you that watch or listen to the show recordings later, thank you for being part of this as well. Excuse me. Ewan, thank you for being you. Muller, thanks for making sure we have people for shows. And Odd Technologies, thank you for being here and being our sponsor. With that, we're going to wrap up now. So don't forget to join us tomorrow for the Mac Show. Then come back again next Thursday for the Big Show. And everyone, have an awesome weekend.